Hey guys, it's Thurbleton here. This episode of the Lincoln Cast is actually the first half of a 4-hour long episode that I've ended up cutting in half. This is an hour and a half and then 2.5 hours. There will be no plugs at the end of this. They're actually at the end of the Scotchcast part, which will probably be released a couple days after this, probably Monday. And then we'll try getting the next episode, you know, like the middle to end of the week. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this week's episode of the Lincoln Cast with guest host, self-confessed cynic, and Durin. I think Durin may still play Guild Wars. Anyway, take care, all. Welcome to the Lincoln Cast for the week of the 22nd of February, 2014. My name is Thurbleton, and joining me today is self-confessed cynic.
Start nine, democracy.
I don't
know. Democracy.
Are you trying to, like, use your, like, you have to say Xbox first, and then voice command.
Xbox democracy.
All right. What about Xbox Squiddle? No, not Bell, not Bell. Oh. Xbox Squiddle, turn on.
Okay.
Okay, there we go. Squiddle okay, joining us today.
Hello.
Shinboy.
Xbox Anarchy.
All right. And then on Smart Glass, through the Xbox, with the new Windows system, Durin joined us again. Welcome back. No, we're having technical issues. We can't reach Durin. It's crashed.
Do we get extra money from Microsoft for every download of this podcast?
Oh, God.
Is that how this works? That's how they do business, right?
I think we're going to switch to Android now. We got bought up by Amazon.
Oh, okay.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
So we're done with Helix now? So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. This is a trying to be Guild Wars-themed podcast.
A lot to talk about.
Yeah,
I was confused when you introduced this as the Lincoln Cast, because I was told prior to recording that we were doing the Slinkin Cast.
Oh,
yeah. And
the Slinkin Cast might be a brilliant
Slinky podcast.
If this RSS feed evolves into being the Slinky Cast,
I can go put my silk pajamas on. I could slink all over this chair. Right.
That would be the most brilliant evolution of a podcast.
Oh God!
And no one would wait, Slinkies? Like you mean like Slinkies? Like no, it's a long story.
The world.
So then we would basically become the Flappy Bird of podcasts. Then right?
It's. Oh, well, no, we're like the living story of podcasts.
Go ahead.
We're the living story of podcasts where we evolve over time with small incremental updates leading to this massive one where an entire zone changes, right, guys?
Thurb, you're basically saying that the majority of our episodes were basically just fucking horse shit then.
Well, that's pretty accurate. I don't know about
well,
what
okay.
You're saying that, Durin.
Continue.
Yeah. The Lincoln's Arch. Lion's Arch.
Lion's Arch, all right.
Had a pretty big change to it, wouldn't you say,
that's
Squiddle
fun.
And Chinboy?
It got destroyed.
Totally fine. Nothing wrong.
Nothing's wrong. Okay, it's fine.
No, it's not totally on fire. It's cool.
I used the toilet and everything backed up, and the sewers are now clean, but the town looks like poop.
So, yeah,
I'm just imagining Chinboy's avatar standing where the crafting area used to be and just pretending to craft and go, no, it's cool, you guys. It's cool. Don't worry. I got this.
It's funny because one of the escort events, it's technically – the event says children, but you can't really have children dying. So they're just full-grown adults. and you have to escort them out of the city. They go past a lot of the crafting areas. So I'd just be standing there on top of the jeweling area. So I'm like, I don't know why you guys are leaving. It's fine. It's all happy. So you're just burning around me.
Maybe we should do the brief story synopsis before we start talking about the zone and the lead up to it and all that. So, I mean, I guess, Shinboy, you're the one, the resident lore master of Living Story.
Yes, I'm resident lore master of this podcast.
Yes.
Our podcast ombudsman.
You're wearing a pointy hat with a cloak with stars on it?
Yes, Shin, yep. Wooden Potatoes Boy.
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
I'm secretly British. Hello.
Shit.
Basically.
That was Wooden Potatoes. When Wooden Potatoes got this podcast?
Shh, don't tell anyone. I don't want to get my YouTube partnership revoked. So basically, Scarlett is the bad, not bad guy, bad girl, if you will.
Yeah.
And her grand plan throughout this whole Living Story season has all led up to her attacking the Lion's Arch, and now this is this patch. So whenever you log in on any character, it shows you a fancy cutscene using in-game assets of just the Lion's Arch getting blowed the hell up. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, like that,
it is. But like, is it just me, or is it a little weird that they show that to you no matter where your character was? Like, I feel like that should be shown when you, if you actually go into Lion's Arch. But I guess if you did, then maybe a lot of people just wouldn't see it because they don't go to Lion's Arch or something.
What's weird is that it shows you that no matter where you are, if you're, this is according to the patch notes. I don't have any low level characters to sell.
Mm-hmm. I can confirm whatever you're saying.
That if you're over level 30, it shows you that no matter where you are. If you're under level 30, it only shows you that when you enter LA.
Wait,
which doesn't make any sense to me.
It does make sense because you can't warp to LA now because it's.
So you can still enter, I mean, when you enter it, like for the event.
Now that you mention it, that is correct because had logged in on my second Guardian and she's only in her 20s and it just logs straight into her. I didn't even think about that.
Okay. I actually have level 20. I just forget that they exist because they're dirty as syrup.
That makes sense. Like, because if you're over level 30, you've probably been to LA, and if you're under level 30,
because level 30 is when the personal story takes you there, more or less.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually, I'm really curious what like the personal story has anybody tried like doing the personal story up to level 30 and seeing what happens when you interact with one of these places that has been affected by the.
That's a good question. I have a character that's pretty close, so I might.
Yeah, I try to do good questions on this internet podcast.
Because it's a good question doesn't mean we have good answers.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. My answer is no, but I'll try it, and then after this is all irrelevant, I'll probably tell you.
I mean, if you take my logic, then everything's going to be fucked up whenever I...
Yeah, I think it'll just be broken. I won't do anything.
Yeah. I know they said they had measures in place so that wouldn't just break your personal story progress, but I don't know what exactly those are.
Like maybe just tosses you into like an old instance of.
Yeah, but like some missions have you enter Lion's Arch like to start the mission.
Right. What I mean though is it probably just like they have some like old pre-event version of Lion's Arch that they just have on servers that they toss you into for the sake
like
of messes your level stuff.
Their whole continuity. What I would like them to do, which would be really funny, is it like. The personal story mission takes place as it normally would, but in like completely destroyed Lion's Arch and no one is really noticing or acknowledging it. But you're just talking to whichever character and just things are burning around you everywhere.
Yeah.
You're pretty cool.
That sounds like a Blizzard game.
Nice.
Wait, Blizzard doesn't make it on those. Come on.
Is Lion's Arch affected by any of the personal story stuff? Like, is there any terrain deformation or anything from any of the personal story stuff? Or was that just
not terrain deformation? No, there. I think there's a couple of things that take place in Lion's Arch, like in little portions of them, but not like terrain deformation stuff. No.
You have to go like underwater, don't you? You have to go to that.
If you like the Whisper story, there's the Whisper's base in LA that you have to go to, which apparently is like perfectly fine.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All
right. Well, that's an underground place though, right? Like down near the sewers, or whatever. Yeah, of course it's fine.
Right, and then for one of the warrior, no, not the warrior, the vigil things, you have to swim underwater.
Oh, yes, you do. Stuff. I forgot about that.
That should be fine, because has anyone checked if the waterways are still fine? Because they probably are.
Most of the waterways are fine, yeah, because they're all like underground.
Yeah.
I saw two commanders in the sewer pipes just like hanging out during the entire, like they weren't doing anything.
Doing what they do.
They were just hanging there. Nice. They were in the top area. You can't, cause you can't exit once you start going into the whispers. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Too much drink. Whispers, hideout, whatever it is. Yeah. Anyway, can't get out that way. They're both sitting up there just hanging out.
Thought that was interesting. You need to go out the way you came in.
Yeah. They weren't doing it. They were at the top, just sitting there with their tags on and just chilling.
Just chilling.
Just chilling.
All right.
Bastards.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's why we don't have command.
In addition to that, speaking of water, there is a giant drill, which this thing is like massive, right. Kind of like the size of the Bahamut from Final Fantasy XII, just hanging out.
So as a person who watched a bunch of stuff about this DLC, God, what do we call it?
DLC?
This patch.
The destruction of
Living Story content update.
Yeah.
The Living Story content update. I have zero idea why there are airships attacking Lion's Arch, and are these... That drill looks like something from the Dredge. Like, is everyone just like working together now? Is that the whole thing?
Here's the story synopsis for so far. That is them, like, what you guys articulated as, one-off boring updates. They've sort of tied together. And so, like, the first big thing back in, like, what, March, that was, the attack of, like, Dredge plus Char or Flame Legion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's one faction that's like attacking. They're portaling in and doing dumb stuff. Then there was the Aether Blades. Those are the Sky Pirates.
That's where you get your airships from.
I don't know where they came from, but that's the airships. A neat thing is during that time was when they started doing the they started setting up the election on the council, which Shimboy.
Right, yeah.
Remembers is the you get to choose your own fractal of the mist that they will make.
Still bitter
about that.
That fractal's okay.
But something
that fractal's pretty good.
Something else about that was Ellen Keel needed to be a captain to get a seat on the captain's council. So to do that, she stole one of the Aetherblade's pirate ships. And there's actually
in order to be a captain, you need a ship.
And why not take a flying ship? She actually shows up with her flying ship during the hour-long event that happens in Lion's Arch that just keeps looping.
Mm.
So that's
ties it all together, as in, like, each one of these factions had something that the big bad needed. It's basically what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Okay, so is... What's the face? Scarlet the big bad, or is
yes.
she... Okay, so she is the big bad.
She is the mastermind, yeah.
There are, especially in the last patch, there are major hints that there's something manipulating her, because there you do the whole, like, she stared into the abyss and something stared back nonsense.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, sure.
And there was, like, you know, leaked stuff from here and there pointing that it was to one of the other dragons, and at the end of this season we'll introduce one of the other dragons as the next, like, real big bad following. You know, the world will move on. The Zaitan is done, and the world will move on to the next one.
That could be cool, because this is. I think one of the interesting observations made by, again, Mr. Wooden Potatoes on the YouTubes was that. Hey, what's up? you stipulated that Scarlet is very quiet during this DLC, which first and foremost is the best possible decision they could have ever made. Cause, god damn it, I don't even know. Wooden Potatoes, I mean, you mentioned that a lot of people liked her character, like her voice actress and the performance she did as Scarlet.
To me as Wooden Potatoes? Is this how this podcast moving forward?
For a second, I thought he was speaking to Wooden Potatoes through the podcast.
Help me, Wooden Potatoes, like, you're my only hope.
She was possibly the single worst voice performance I've heard in a very long time, especially compared to the chick who's in top of in charge of the Nightmare Court, because she's actually
Fallon.
If you compare her to frickin' Scarlet, it's like night and day. But anyway, so apparently people like Scarlet, and she's usually really ha ha.
Well, they don't like Scarlet as a character. Most people hate her. Apparently, it's just like her performance that most people seem to not hate.
Yeah, that's the opinion between people of voice actors, I guess. But
So the point is, she's really big and loud about her domineering and changing the world and all that kind of
stuff. She likes to showboat.
But now she's really quiet. Yeah, and now she's really quiet, and she's like standing there ominously staring over the destruction that's been wrought, and that clear change in her character does hint some changes, which is good. I actually like that. It's good in both ways. A, because a quiet bad guy is way more terrifying than a loud bad guy. Mm-hmm. And B, because fuck that voice acting.
So what if she becomes good, though? Well. What if they're trying to make it so that she becomes good and sees the destruction and gets, like,
it's
a conscience?
I'm not sure if it was Anet or some other theory crafter who thought this up, but or it might have been my crazy ideas, but it's the idea that she is trying to attack the dragons. Like, she's trying to defeat or bring to attention the threat of the other dragons, which she's having to go about it the dangerous way of harming other people, but she's trying to, you know, can't make an omelet without breaking a couple eggs.
I mean, if that's the case and there's a big giant drill, it could be the big badass under the land that she is trying to attack, which could be
Primordius.
Yeah, that could be a pretty cool next dragon if it's.
Yeah, I always thought it was Primordius. There are leaks that say it's not.
It's
people have sort of data mined dialogue.
Hmm.
Saying
isn't he the biggest badass amongst the dragons?
No, he's the smallest.
He's the smallest.
Really, Primordius?
Yeah, the biggest. I think
he was just the first. Yeah,
Krokotork. Right.
The one that was in Eye of the North, or you could see his back.
That's so I. So yeah, this might be straight up Primordius then.
I thought because, one of the ley lines, which actually were involved surprisingly, sort of points to north to where the central transfer chamber kind of was, which is where Primordius was, and where the marionette was. There was a whole bunch of destroyers nearby.
You just said a bunch of words I do not understand.
Central transfer chamber
was the thing in Eye of the North.
Yeah, it's the thing where the Asuras, it's their homeworld, which they built the central transfer chamber. Right in Primordius' lair.
They were just hey, there's a lot of magic here, and they didn't realize it's because there was a giant dragon there.
Gotcha.
And then the marionette was the last update, which was Scarlet's big robotic marionette thing. That was a world boss.
Mm. Yeah, you might have liked Shinboy, Syndic. It was a really good take on, there's just a big, tough group boss event that they were allowed to make intentionally tough because it was just a week or 2 week long thing.
Okay, yeah. That actually sounds pretty cool.
And that was right near a whole bunch where there's a crack in the ground that had a whole bunch of destroyers near it, which were Primordius's minions.
Right. So. Okay.
So that's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's what all signs are pointing to.
Yeah, all signs are pointing to Primordius. Giant drill,
especially
destroyers.
With underground. But according to a lot of the data mined dialogue, it's Mordremoth, I think it's pronounced, the jungle dragon. I know it's a dumb name.
I'm sorry. But the jungle dragon sounds like
it's a sequel to the Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Also known as the other giant plant that is not the Silvari were born from a tree. There's rumored that there's a second tree, or in this case, a jungle dragon that is.
Wait, is it the dragon that you fought in the dream?
No.
Okay. It's during the living story for the Silvari, you meet another Silvari that is not from that tree. It's from another one that we believe the Shimbo and I, and I guess these are other data miner theory crafters, to be Mordremoth, which, having not grown as a tree with the teachings of Ventari, the tablet saying hey, don't be a dick to people, that second tree, Mordremoth, would probably have grown to be an evil dragon that just consumed stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, for as dumb as jungle dragon sounds, the arena art for jungle dragon.
To be fair, the other dragon that we have yet to come across is named Bubbles. The deep sea dragon.
Not officially.
It's the jungle dragon is a community name.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. He looks totally badass. It could be the case that maybe jungle dragon and ground dragon get it on.
It sort of makes sense because that explains the double threat going forward. That explains sort of the whole Nightmare Court and why they chose to make the villain of this season a Solari.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because the jungle dragon infant.
Also, there's a big chunk of all of the Maguma Wastes right to the west of our current playable area that's just sort of there and it's not open.
Well, and then also to your previous point, the two dragons won't really team up. It's that's been seen that like the destroyers are fighting the zombie sort of thing. The dragons don't team up. They're big enough to be a threat to lesser beings, but not to each other.
Yeah, but like if one is like kind of influencing the freeing of another, that could be interesting. And they could just not necessarily team up, but they could both destroy humanity and everyone else.
But as much as I want to get off theory crafting, there's something I want to get talk about for this update that happened, and it's that I feel kind of like cheated that I knew that Lion's Arch was going to get attacked / destroyed weeks before the update actually happened. Like, it's not even without data mining. It's like they made updates and posts. Like, the next update will be Escape from Lion's Arch. And
oh, that's dumb.
It's
one of those things where it's like, it makes sense from their point of view.
Yeah, like they want to drum up support, get people interested in it. But I wish they'd, like, instead, like, the previous update, you, for example, like, capture Scarlet, and you have a big celebration, and that's the update, the big celebration. But the first day of the celebration, the attack starts. Like, that would have been so much more interesting.
But we were talking about this before on Mumble, and it's like, I was under the assumption that this patch, or the last two patches were going to go, this one would be like, I guess, sort of the climax, or like the big, like, finish. And then the last patch would be like, okay, like, sort of celebrate and tie up loose ends. But it doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm curious what they're going to do with the next patch. So we'll find out on Tuesday.
I don't know. Like, they could have just called it like the Dark Days or something like that, and then when it actually happened, used the proper name, or just kept with the other name.
It's not even that. There were a lot of signs in the previous patches and like images and all that pointing towards LA.
Right.
Yeah. You do this whole like investigation thing with the detective lady
Marjorie.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, Lion's Arch is most certainly going to, like, it's really ham-fisted that, like, oh, they're going to attack Lion's Arch.
That's part and parcel with ArenaNet storytelling.
And, like, it also makes sense from, like I said, a marketing point of view, where, like, to the point where there was a separate thread on Gaff, like, not in the Guild Wars 2 OT, that was like, hey, you guys, they're blowing up a capital city. That's kind of crazy.
And that is, but, like, I wish they'd tried, like, it was a risk to believe in social media that, like, they could spread like wildfire. Everyone, quick, log on now. Lion's Arch is destroyed. Sudden surprise.
To be fair, it kind of has worked.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
No, like, this worked
not
brilliantly.
Not even to see, like, you know, copies flying off the shelves and IGN front page article on it, but worked well enough.
Yeah.
Seems to be a lot of people.
But it's just like I don't know, that kind of bummed me out a little bit.
Shrug. It's an interesting update. I like what they did. We actually haven't talked about what actually happens in the update aside from the opening cinematic. So,
the city's on fire, and you run around. Like we talked about, you rescue children while jumping around at old crafting stations.
There are like two ways to really – the way it works is top of the hour. It's actually five after. There's three entrances into LA, one to the north, one to the south, and one to the east. The east one is new. The north and south ones are ones that were there, like, normally. One to Gendar, one to Blood Tide. And there's three defend events, or I think they're defend events, that go on simultaneously in each zone. And once those are done, like, say you're in Gendar, if you finish the Gendar event, you can now enter LA. And once inside, it starts a 45-minute event. So it runs from five after until like 10 of.
Right.
Where you have to rescue as many people as you can in those 45 minutes. Then it basically spits you back out. But you can do it one of two ways. You can either roll around in a giant Zerg just going from event to event and sort of farm the bags that the mobs drop.
And you do get a chunk of people per event.
Yeah. And, you know, just as you come across people, you can still, you know, walk over to them and encourage them and they'll run away and leave the city. Or you can do what I've been doing, like, last couple of days, is a guild has sprouted up. There's one in NA, there's one in EU. The NA one is Lion's Arch Search and Rescue, or the tag is, like, MEDX, or Medics, which I think is kind of cute.
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
And pretty much, they just sort of, it's no one's main guild, if you get my point. So they sort of come together and try and get as many people, as many like-minded people in the same overflows as possible to try and just sort of run around in small groups of anywhere from like 2 to 6 people and just run around and rescue as many citizens as you can, because you get certain tiers of rewards for how many you rescue in that time period.
Right. Yeah.
If you get the max, you can get any item, pretty sure it's any item, from any of the previous Living Story things from the season. So people are getting the jetpacks from like a year ago.
This actually has some people bummed off, because apparently, while it is important to like rescue as many people as possible, if you want to get like just if you want to be selfish about it and get the most the best reward in terms of like number of epics and all of that, then it's you want to stick with the groups and do the big zerging.
Not necessarily true. It's sort of like a risk thing, because you'll get more bags if you straight farm, but you don't get a shot at the really, really, really expensive items. Is there also like exclusive items for this event? Like Captain Magnus, who's like the head of the Captain's Council in LA, lost an eye and now has an eye patch. So I think that might be in there somewhere. But you can also get like monocles, which are several hundred gold each.
His eye is there or his eye patch?
His eye patch.
Okay, it's like, I didn't know if it was like you found the captain's eye. It's a magical ring.
You can get monocles, which are like several hundred gold. You can get jetpacks, which are several hundred gold. You can get the jade weapon. You can get like the coffers that drop the jade weapon tickets.
Several hundred gold?
Mm-hmm. When I checked before, the heavy armor monocle was the cheapest at like 500. And the...
Christ, inflation much? Oh my god.
The light armor one was like 800.
Jeez.
So yeah.
But I mean, the longer a game goes on,
inflation happens.
What happens is as the hour progresses and you save more people, throughout the entire time, there's these like miasma things that are filling up and raining miasma. And it's basically the place starts filling up with gas. Poison gas. And eventually it just becomes so powerful that the captain's just like, everyone get out of here now. And that ends
it. Certain things you do can actually kind of slow that down, right?
You can delay it. So instead of really,
it seems to be more or less on a timer.
Yeah. It's the mechanic behind the 45-minute timer. That's the long and short of it. Like, what was the phase? The chick, Scarlet, like the previous one with the giant tree or whatever is the development of that specific poison, which is apparently uncurable. Some curable poison that she just pumps into this town. That's how they've derived this 45-minute / 1 hour switcheroo for this specific event.
Yeah, and then it starts ticking off your health and you just have to try and escape, or if you die, you just get kicked out, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Actually, what's funny about that is people who do stay in there and get killed spawn outside in this, like, you know, medic tent, and the NPCs start reviving the players.
That's cool. I like that. That's awesome. Right, so is this actually a fun update to play?
Yes. I think zerging around is kind of boring, but you do get decent stuff for it. And sometimes near like where the Mystic Forge and the Trading Post is, you get crazy nonsense where there will be three events going on at once in like literally right on top of each other. And since there's a zerg there, all of them will overscale. And you'll have maybe 50 players, and all of a sudden there's like 80 level 84 mobs.
That's awesome.
It just becomes nonsense.
That sounds pretty fun.
And it's also fun to roam around and try and free as many people as you can.
Right. It was kind of an interesting scene. Like, I liked the... Because what do you guys think of the actual deformation of Lion's Arch? And do you think they're going to repair it? Because I like looking at Lion's Arch in this new kind of broken down further.
I think they'll fix it to an extent. It's not like it'll sort of revert back to the old model.
Right. But do you think they're just going to do, I guess, it's going to go back to the green hills, but it'll be deformed. It'll be changed. Like the actual models themselves will be the new models, which is the different shape to the land.
I don't know, because I would assume that they would like the bridges that are blocked off, like the bridge between where the lion statue is and where like the Mystic Forge is sort of blocked off, and there's like a new bridge that goes around it.
Right.
You could see them like clearing that off because that's what a logical group of people would do.
Yeah. 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 That's
what the citizens
cool.
would do.
Yeah. But we'll do you think it'll happen soon? Because I don't.
No.
Because this event has stages to it as well, right? So this is the first part to it. I assume you're going to deal with the drill at some point, right?
I assume dealing with the drill is the next patch.
Yeah. And is that going to be like 2 weeks from now?
Right. It'll be like a week from this Tuesday. Right. So I guess that's what? First Tuesday of. I guess it'd be the 4th of March?
Well, it's also. This is the second to last update, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's probably like the next update will be whatever the reveal is, and then there's going to be a downtime where Lion's Arch might start getting rebuilt, or maybe it's that I'm not sure about. I'd like to see them rebuild it, especially for the Lion's Arch statue, which was yet again destroyed.
Josh must be real salty about that.
I messaged him saying, like, you know, it's this whole escape from Lion's Arch is probably just, you know, another excuse to destroy your awesome fountain, and he just responded with, like, yeah, everyone hates that thing.
So oh, man. Wait, so I guess that's cool. Like, I'm actually legitimately interested to hear what the big reveal is.
I was joking with people that I've been playing too many JRPGs lately because I was saying that my guess is that you're going to get to the top of the drill and it's going to be a big open platform and Scarlet's going to be there and she's going to ascend into some like logic defying demigod and be the final boss. And her name is going to change from Scarlet to something just like at the end or like,
yeah, Calamity. Yeah,
that's going to be the final boss.
That'd be awesome.
So long as they like add crazy J-pop electric guitar screaming.
It's
going to
grow like
Fuck
angel
yes.
wings and it's going to be butt rock and it's going to be great.
Butt rock? I'm not sure. It'll either be like one wing or like a million wings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No options.
it'll be one wing and then like eight arms.
There has been some crazy armor added to the game.
That's weird.
I want to talk about the Zodiac armor because
Zodiac armor is real weird.
It is real weird.
Like just from an artistic standpoint, it's so different from anything else in the entire game, and not necessarily in the best way.
Yeah, it's not different
from the Zodiac weapons.
It adds a lot of the effects that we've seen with the Great Sword, Sunrise and Twilight, like that sort of effect with armor, and I was sort of expecting that type of like crazy graphic stuff to be the Ascended armor, or at least PvE reward. I don't know. Maybe they're. Do you think they're just testing the waters with the shop, and then we'll release them in updates?
I don't know because it seems like they were testing to see if people liked. Because what's weird about Twilight and Sunrise is that they have depth to them. Like they're sort of the sky, but it's sort of set back. It's not just it's not like you're looking at just a picture of the sky. It's like you're looking sort of through a window.
Right.
This armor has that same effect.
Really?
This armor has the same. Yeah.
There's depth. So the skin is
really?
Like blue but deeper?
It's sort of like it's kind of hard to describe. It looks sort of like the person themselves is hollow. They're sort of filled with the sky, if you get what I mean.
I did not see that at all from the preview.
That's kind of cool.
Kind of have to see
Yeah.
If you hang out I can't say if you hang out in Lion's Arch anymore.
If you hang out in like Divinity's Reach or something, where all the cool kids have always hung out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sure.
You might be seeing someone with it.
Wait.
Yeah,
so this is a purchased armor, or is it?
Yeah, it's you buy it from the gem shop.
Oh geez.
And it's weird because it's. The armor, obviously, and the effect are piecemeal. Meaning that you have people running around. Like, it's a full set, but it's still.
So you're just wearing the chest, only your chest is, like, hollowed out in blue?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, like, what a lot of people have been doing that I've seen, especially with the heavy armor set, have been wearing everything but the helmet. They still have, like, the regular face.
Right. Okay. All right. So. I guess that's cool. Like, there's nothing, I know nothing to say, like, negative about it. It's an interesting new effect. It's pretty cool looking armor. And we all know that the gem store, that shit can be bought with gold. So it's not really a hindrance to anyone. So,
well, I mean, like, what's in every way, that conversion rate's been steadily rising, slowly, but steadily.
But still, it's not, if you play the game regularly, it's not too bad.
Okay.
Sure. I took, 1200 gems today, I think, and cashed them in for gold. Just because I wasn't going to use them for anything. Usually what I do. And I think I got like, I want to say it was like 60 gold for something like that for the 1200.
Jeez.
It's not, if you want to buy things with gold, it's not unreasonable.
Yeah.
Right.
Not like you need to get like thousands of gold to get a set of armor.
Yeah. So it works out. So it's, I like it. It's pretty good from every direction. I was just hoping when I heard Zodiac armor and saw the Zodiac armor, I was hoping for a lore reason of like surrounding them. But then you reminded me that there's Zodiac weapons and there's no like lore around the Zodiac weapons either. Like, I guess it's Final Fantasy XII rubbing off on me. And I kind of want to watch, I just kind of want something interesting surrounding that. Like something about like the 12 gods or some shit, like some other set of deities or that would be cool, but this is cool too, I guess.
Ivalice and their weird obsession with the Zodiac.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a weird effect to it that's kind of hard to describe without seeing it. I know that's like a bit of a cop out.
Yeah.
But it's true.
It's similar to the effects of like Sunrise, but it's just a straight blue sky, right?
Mm. Yeah. It's like blue with a whole bunch of white dots. Yeah. So they're sort of sparkly.
That's kind of cute. I have one last part about this new update to cap it off. So if you have anything between now and there, I would suggest you do that.
Yeah, I just want to briefly see what your guys' opinions are. Shinboy especially, and I guess Squiddle, if you managed to play around with it some. But like the Vigil Keep got changed some.
That's great.
It looks really nice. I like the way they did it. I like that, like, you know, they have different camps and the vendors and whatnot of Lion's Art setup shop. A little bit more like bummed about, I guess I didn't make the connection that if Lion's Arch is destroyed, access to the fractals of the mist. No, not the craft. Oh, crafting it anywhere. The fractals of the mist is the one thing that like this one teleportation device is the one like, you know, got messed up and now is the one way to get to the fractals. But I guess not, because they were able to recreate it at Vigil Keep.
Maybe just move it.
They just moved it. It's fine. They picked it up.
It's like a portable Stargate. You just pick it up, open your bag of trips, and put it down.
Silly me.
What you do is you get.
Did they relocate it to that unused portal in Visual Keep? Is that where they put it?
They used
it's out on like a hill somewhere.
Yeah, those portals, those portals you're talking about are ones that take you to the Trinity Fortress or whatever.
Down
south and over. Like that's what those do.
Okay.
They added just like another 6 portals, or actually no, it's
more than that.
It's four for the cities, one for the fractal, 3 for the world versus world, and did they add a fourth one?
Five for the cities. Five for the cities. 5 for world versus world. 1 for PvP, then 1 for fractals. They added a lot.
Right. So it's just becoming a pseudo replacement for Lion's Arch for now. Or it could be for the foreseeable future.
Because I like open world cities. Like, I think it's neat to just sort of stroll on up to a city.
Like Beetleton.
Excuse me?
Like Beetleton,
exactly.
Yeah, I love it.
It's really nicely laid out. Everything's close to each other without feeling cramped. Like the Mystic Forge is sort of in between the trading post and bank still, but it's a lot shorter distance. All the dungeon merchants are like in between the Mystic Forge and the trading post, so they're not on the other side of the map anymore. Although they're out of order.
Oh, jeez. That's so good. Wait, how many waypoints do they add? Like, can you just port around there, or do you have to walk everywhere?
It's really running. It seems like just a high yield outpost.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Like it's very concentrated.
It's the most action of the Vigil Keep scene in forever. Pretty much.
You know what the waypoint is in the Vigil Keep? Like by memory, sort of like on the right hand side of it up top.
Yeah, yeah.
That's still where it is. That is pretty much added like everything to the east of it.
Okay.
Doesn't go right. Super.
But yeah,
that sounds cool.
I think that's all the stuff I have for this update. I'm curious in our list of notes who wrote Blades in all capital letters.
Oh, I did, because they added the backpack for this update, because most of them have weird backpacks.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot, Spinal Blades is what they're called. And I think this is cool and a cool concept, because a lot of the back pieces you have to upgrade in rarity, you know, from like rare to exotic to... So, what am I saying? Something funny?
No. Like that upon mentioning, we're like, you know, 40 some odd minutes into this show, but upon mentioning Backpack of Blades, then I see Dern has opened Guild Wars 2.
No. My
interested in this.
On the Blades is I think they're fucking stupid. They don't match anything. Oh. No, I was logging because I wanted to see that fucking Zodiac armor again.
See, that's where you're wrong. Because once you get the Blades to Ascended, you can choose their color upon getting like, certain items that are not actually in yet.
Well, like choose their color on the fly, or just like you choose which color you want it to be?
When you get the Ascended one, because basically the way it works is, like I said, it upgrades in rarity. And as you upgrade in rarity from like, you know, blue to green to rare to exotic to Ascended, they gain more Blades. Just kind
of. I need an image of this because this is just, I'm probably.
Yeah, imagine like sending Blades sticking out of your back. On what looks like a jetpack type device.
Oh, I think I see an image of it. Spinal Blade.
Oh, is that
okay,
what
yeah, I see it.
Okay.
I see it. Okay.
So that's the exotic version, I believe, that they're just linked. And when you ascend it, you get a fourth set, but it turns like gold and has a gold glow. And people have mined the recipes, but the items that you need for them are not in yet. Well, you'll be either to keep it gold, turn it like a really nice teal blue, like a rust red, or like a really vibrant green. Depending whatever
it's not the color that bothers me so much as just the aesthetic of it. Like it just the mechanical nature of it just doesn't seem, like go with a lot of stuff in the game.
It's too StarCrafty.
Is the idea that each blade holds a section in your pack? Is that kind of what, or just a back piece? And it just
a back.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand how.
Got it. Thinking way too much about this.
You're
it's cool. Okay.
You try and find the screenshot of where I was looking at this with my Necro, who is green and white.
This is something that would be on Kerrigan's armor. That's what it looks like.
I like the look
of the Queen of Blades.
I do like the look of it a lot, to be honest.
There's a screenshot. I need to try and find this. But yeah, you basically become the Queen of Blades, and I think it's kind of neat.
Cool. Okay.
Especially if you ascend it.
Yeah, that's something I can see than like just throwing in the shop sort of thing. But the Zodiac armor I was more like surprised about. It's cool. I love everything about this update. I got some beef about
like the idea
how
of
they went about
upgrading things. Rarity.
Yeah,
like the idea of changing rarity, changing the skin as you evolve a thing. It's kind of like a Pokemon backpack.
That is wait. So how do you actually change the rarity of this? Is this the only item in the game that you can change?
You
the rarity
need.
Of?
No, there are some backpacks that you can go from like exotic to ascended, but this is the only one I think that you sort of, I could be wrong, that you take from like blue, but pretty much you need a whole bunch of like that tier of metal. So like mm-hmm. goes from like iron to platinum to mithril to orichalcum as you go up the rarity, plus like dust and stuff.
And so you just chuck it in the Mystic Forge.
Just chuck it in the Mystic Forge with the back piece.
I would actually like that system to be applied to more shit. That sounds awesome.
What I just linked in Skype chat is my Necro with the green one on, previewed. I think it looks really nice.
Well, you look like the StarCraft chick.
That's just, fine. I'm perfectly okay with that.
What does that matter? I mean, it looks really good.
You look like the Queen of Blades, but I think it looks nice.
Hey, Shin, is your character doing anything later? I'd like to go to a movie or...
like that Team Tier 3, which is like next to no clothing?
Yeah. I like it very, very much so.
Cynic, what was the cap on the Guild Wars part
of
this?
So for me, easily the coolest part about this update, even beyond the destruction shit and the cutscene, which wasn't too bad and all that kind of stuff, and Wooden Potatoes totally picked up on it as well, was the reaction of the Tengu to all this shit going on.
Oh, yes.
Where I love the fact, I like the way he approaches. Well, I mean, Chimboy. I mean, you. I like the way you approach this topic, in your video, which was great, by the way.
Thank you, Governor. I'm British.
Which was, it's totally true that a lot of people, and I knew this would happen, were like, "Oh, this is great," because like Lion's Arch is gone, so like the Tengu are going to open their doors and be all welcoming and like take all the refugees and shit. And I was like, that's not what the Tengu would do. And then seconds later, Wooden Potatoes described what the Tengu did. And I was like, yes. So what apparently they did was they were like, fuck this. And they went all the guardians outside went inside. And now they're at the top of the wall. And they just fire arrows at you if you approach.
Yep.
Best.
It was like, we don't want to deal with this nonsense. This is your problem.
Exactly. Fuck you guys. Just don't bring your shit in here.
I have a question. Is there any backstory to who the Tengu are, or are they?
Absolutely.
They're keepers of the wind. It's on the wiki and all that. But yeah, they're
okay.
They were in Guild Wars 1.
Okay,
they were like a friendly race.
Yes, they're based on based on the Japanese folk creatures, the Tengu, more or less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's also Chinese ones, which are quite similar. They're bird people, but they're really badass bird people, and they're awesome in Guild Wars 1. So everyone, I wanted to play as a Tengu since. It was announced that there was multiple races in Guild Wars 2. In fact, I was certain before the races were announced that one of them would be Tengu, because they are awesome.
Would I be wrong in assuming they seem to be more like a monk type class? If they had a class, like if each race had a class, they would be kind of like a
They had like a lot of warriors, a lot of rangers.
They were a lot of warriors. Yeah.
Okay.
Really. And you should see the way they run. Oh, that's so cool. but the idea of the Tengu being fuck you guys is, I love that, and I love the fact that there was a reaction by the Tengu means that Arena hasn't forgotten the Tengu. So I'm more excited about a potential Tengu uprising / comeback in the next big update, which is cool. I literally mean expansion, because
an expansion.
Yeah, if this is happening here, like what's his face, the. All this stuff around Lion's Arch is happening here. It could mean that. What does that mean for the expansion? If this does announce the next dragon,
well, like right? The thing is, well, didn't okay. Microsoft in their financial call say they haven't made up their mind about an expansion.
It was again just said, like, you know, the financials. This Living Story stuff is making us money. We don't care what this what ArenaNet does. They keep doing what they're doing.
Right. It's. Yeah.
It seems like what they would want to do is if they introduce the next big bad, they'll release a whole bunch of areas, like, for free.
Hmm.
Seems like what they would do.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that we don't get a new playable race for another, 1 to 2 years?
I don't know, because they said it's very confusing to figure out, because it seems like a paid expansion would maybe drum up more support than that same exact content if it were released for free at the same time.
I agree. Because you have the whole
doesn't make site. Any sense when you think about it.
Well, here's something else to consider.
People would rather pay for it than not.
Yeah.
Something else to consider with the whole, if they were to add one, when would they do it, is they recently said, at the end of the year, beginning of the year post, was that they're going to hold off on all the updates and changes and mechanics and systems and whatnot until they have a large amount and it's one big thing. Do you think that would be a good, when would be a good time to reveal a new race? Cause you'd have to reveal balance changes and whatnot too for racial stuff, wouldn't you?
Well, they're doing the big balance patch and all of that after this next patch. They said that already. The Living Story team's going to take some time off.
Like the idea is that the races play the same. And that's why in PvP, you can't use any racial skills. Yeah. Except for Warp as well, but it doesn't count. So
they're all kind of bad.
Yeah. And so if they just added the Tengu as another race, the main issue there isn't the playable factor. It's the fact that what's their personal story going to be? Cause it doesn't tie into any of the other personal stories at all for the whole thing, right?
But it'll be awesome. I would give them the best props if, for the Tengu's living story, it only goes to level 40 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It basically gets them, okay, you're in the, you've chosen Vigil, and all that, but we've already killed the guy so that the next time a big story comes out.
Is that if they're introducing a new dragon, that would be a good time to do it, because then they also did a post recently about how they're retiring the really bad cutscene side by side conversations.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Really? They're doing that?
they're not doing any of those.
Did you guys talk about this on the show before? Because I want to talk about it right now.
I believe we briefly talked about it when you were last on the podcast. When we talked about the end of the not Kindaren Fields, the one with the giant plant tree. I have a headache, so I'm.
Yeah.
But my point is that would mean that's pointing towards them working on new living story stuff, not living story, personal story stuff, right?
Yes, it does.
And
it does.
Introducing a new big bad and having the world move on would necessitate a new personal story, which would be the perfect time to introduce a new race.
Yeah.
Yes, because you can have the new race doing
the new story as everyone else.
Exactly. If I was them, I wouldn't do what Doubleton suggested. I wouldn't have them join the vigil and all that shit. I would have a really interesting, really dense personal story that does take you from 1 to 40, but all of that happens within the Tengu lands. And you're actually interacting with the Tengu people, and there's their own internal strife and politics, which explains why they've been so segregated from the rest of the world.
The racial stuff is in the first 30 levels.
Yeah, like the racial stuff would probably be the first 30. It's just like that last
Racial stuff is also the best of any of the personal stories. That's the best stuff of any of them.
Yes. And in this case, I would want to go even further. So it may be 40 to 50. Only at the last part, which is because obviously the rest of the people, so people who are using existing characters, they're not going to add another equivalent to 1 to 80 verse of story for them. It's just going to be the last part of moving on to the next dragon and killing it, right? So you have like all that space of like 60, 70, 80 onwards to play with.
They would maybe change some of the order stuff, just to, I guess, switch names around and be like, okay, instead of studying the undead, we're studying whatever this dude's minions are.
Well, no, I mean, like,
that just makes sense.
That's what I meant is...
I wouldn't do that. I would just have them have their own thing, no order, no bullshit.
We're saying is like the first 30 to 35 levels and like first 1 to 39 is learning your race and learning order that stuff. In the current personal story, you transition into picking an order and going towards the big dragon. That is where the Tengu story or whatever race they choose ends. And then either at the exact same time, they have an update that has a new personal story, or when they choose later on down the road to add a new personal story. For everyone, that starts, if you're level 80, that starts at a level 40 character. Like, you just down-level yourself to level 40, and then everyone can start as if they've chosen a order. That seems like a good entry point.
It's weird, because you couldn't add a race with them only having stuff to 40. You'd have to have...
Well, the thing is, if you're introducing a new big bad, you have the new big bad, like the...
Yeah, it's what Chip was saying is you do it all at once.
Going after the new bad guy stuff start working its way in at the same time that the order stuff is working its way in on the original five races.
Like the Tengu, for some reason, have intricate knowledge on the jungle dragon's location and information. Thus, why they've started acting with alliance with other people.
It has to, all six, assuming adding another one, races have to come together at some point.
Right. And if it happens like that, I would be less interested than if, like, for example, let's look at the other coin. Like, what if they just had a new expansion, did everything at one shot, right? That would be a case where if you look at old Guild Wars, the Guild Wars 1 stuff, it would be old characters literally just jump over to the new expansion and start just after the starting area or equivalent, and go through that whole expansion, the whole storyline. And new characters in the new land would have this their own little starting area bit, and then the whole new story. So you're right. So it'd be like the equivalent of a journey from level 40 to level 80, but with your old characters. And they did that, but all in a new landmass or new sections of landmass that previously unexplored. Are we kind of both saying the same thing? Because that's what
I'm pretty sure we're all arguing on the same thing. Yeah.
Okay, cool. We're all saying the same thing. That would be awesome.
Okay. Well, I mean, like Squiddle, what's you haven't chimed in too much on the idea of like a new expansion or a race thing. Like what? Do you have an opinion on the Tengu, or would you like to see a new update with... Well, would you like to see a new expansion, and if so, like, what most interests you? Kantha, the new jungle, the far north with the old Char?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've always said that a new expansion will bring me back, and I think they did a really good job. I really like what they've done so far with the whole Lion's Arch being destroyed thing. I mean, but...
How much time? Have you had a chance to run around in Lion's Arch yet? I know you're...
I did it. I actually took probably about 2 hours, an hour and a half today.
Two circuits, so to speak.
Yeah, I only did one, but I got him right at the beginning and got a lot of the all the you know perks and the benefits, and I didn't do a second one just because I had other things I was dealing with here around at the time. But I'm going to jump in after this to do some more, definitely.
So the way you were describing it before, your room that you are currently in is kind of a mess.
Yeah, I rearranged my desk in my room before I even jumped in, which was a dumb idea, but I decided to do it anyway.
But yeah, it's with the whole potential expansion. That's like that would bring.
I want to see Tengu. I've always been intrigued by them ever since I saw them in the area. And I mean, I didn't play Guild Wars 1, so I didn't know a backstory. I thought they were a cool looking race, and was hoping one day you could play them or at least have them interact more than just being guards that are guarding a giant door, and that's about it.
Yeah.
I am hoping for an update. Maybe I'm hoping they're working on an expansion, maybe for December or early January next year, where they incorporate, you know, the Tengu and maybe some open up more of the area. You know, so maybe more areas you can go to and stuff to do. For me, I'm kind of the person that once I get my first little lady, I don't really care to do it on multiple characters, even though I would love to just be able to go, okay, I'm a level 80. I want an 80 of these classes.
Yeah.
You know, and just say, okay, I'm there. I've done the story stuff. I don't want to redo everything again. Yeah. Even though it's different, I know, for different classes. I get that.
But you wouldn't have any problem with, like, if they just add a new story that your characters got down level to 40 to start the new story.
Because they do that anyway.
Yeah. Like, you'd be okay with that, right?
Yeah. And if it was, I guess if it was, because I dabbled in all of them. I decided on, I can't think of my character's class, Assassin.
Thief.
Thank you. Assassin Thief.
It's a new game. It's close
enough to an Assassin.
Yeah, Assassin. They're afraid. Assassin's Creed 9. Anyway, so I decided on that character, and
well, you just play a common thief. That'd be the best.
That'd be awesome. But you know, yeah, if there was a new character, I would definitely play it. You know, for a bit. But if it got into the old, here's what I'm looking for: is not the same old story, because a lot of it you play the same as you progress, no matter what character you are. It's the same context.
Once you get to a certain point, outside of the racial stuff, which again is the best stuff.
Yeah.
It all becomes the same, more or less.
Yeah, and I don't want to deal with that. I want it to all be completely different and new and changed a bit. So I'm hoping with an expansion they'll do something like that. You know, time will tell, and we shall see.
There's a lot of room over in Maguma here that is ready to be explored. I'm just looking at the map.
Yeah.
A lot of room over here.
So it's Squiddle, like. On my part, I kind of just want them to say, hey, this is the new expansion. Here's these new race or two new races, because there's still the Kodan I want to play as well. Here's the new races or race. Here's a couple new weapons for each of the class, which diversifies your skill set even further.
Yeah.
And here's a new landmass. I'd rather them do that than add the same content, but over time for free. What are your thoughts?
So it's interesting. I know that for me, I mean, I grew up doing, you know, where you had WoW, and that was my first big MMO was Ultima Online. But
you're dating yourself here.
I know. But the one that kind of really kept me going in the whole aspect, you know, you had Anarchy Online, which I played. You had DAOC, Dark Age of Camelot. And then, you know, I went to WoW from there because everyone I knew was playing WoW at that time. That was like the big thing. And I kind of got used to the whole, okay, every year or whatever their time scale was, it felt like a year each year. Here's an expansion. So it's kind of like a milestone. You could say, okay, here is vanilla game. Here is expansion. Here is the next expansion. And you can kind of rate, you know, what has changed based on that. And it is hard.
Right.
When they
switch over to like a first number version number, like it went to like 3 point whatever to 4.0 or
right.
Yeah.
You know, and much like I like, you know, people enjoy phone updates because they add new things here and there and bug fixes. And that's kind of, I feel like the story modes are kind of like their bug fixes to allow them to fix certain things. I'm waiting for that, you know, 4.0 release that gives me, you know, everything's been fixed past 4.0. We're going to start with new bugs, but it's going to be a lot of new stuff. Yeah, and enjoy.
Exactly what it is.
And that's kind of what I am waiting for. I really hope I will jump in every now and then and play some of the new stuff and really enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, but I do want that. I want that milestone to be set to say, okay,
start again. More gingerbread to ice cream sandwich than ice cream sandwich to jelly bean.
Yes. That is a
or jelly bean to Kit Kat.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Basically, I think what it comes down to is like rather than what we've been getting, which is kind of just piecemeal, almost like episodic content. Like I think what Squiddle's saying, it's probably the same thing I want. Like we just want some fresh, like a kind of a refresh to the game. Like come in here and give me. I want a whole bunch of new stuff to do.
Yeah.
It's like they've given you a whole bunch of new stuff to do, but it's been like a little bit at a time.
Yeah, if you've been doing it as it's been coming out, like none of it feels like it's a whole bunch of new stuff. Like, oh, this week there's a new set of quests I can do.
What's sort of surprised me is looking back on it, less so from a content point of view, but from a feature point of view, it's been kind of crazy how much stuff they've added since this Living Story season started.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to people about how it kind of has that. I think I even mentioned this on the podcast. Like, you know, I can't remember the exact phrasing of it, but, you know, the thing with the boiling water slowly and whatever you're cooking in it doesn't notice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that has sort of happened in terms of features.
Yeah. If you boil a frog, they don't notice that it's getting hotter and then they die. Yeah.
Which is the very, like, it's the essence of, for some of us, what we'd call the problem, and for others of us, we'd say is the awesome part of it, is that for us, the problem is, because happening so slowly, it's the equivalent of not noticing in that it's hard to care.
Yeah.
It's hard to care that it's happened.
Because like they've added like world versus world ranks. They added like custom things matches for PvP. Yeah. They added like a proper looking for group tool. They added a new map to World v World. the looking for group tool works fine.
For a small subset of, or maybe large, maybe that's the problem.
But
for a subset of players,
in that LFG tool.
What am I looking for?
Yeah.
To hit a button and get thrown into a group and go do some dungeons.
That's how it works. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's how it works in concept, but more often than not, you're just gonna get kicked because you aren't a warrior.
Well, that's the group. But that's the group decision. That doesn't mean that the tool's not broken.
Well, sure, but like the problem is like there are plenty of looking for group tools in other games, and they figured out that that's going to happen, so they put in measures to make sure you can't kick somebody as soon as a match starts.
Well, then nobody would use it. I mean, there is
people use it all the time in those other MMOs.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying that if people don't have the freedom to pick and choose, like if you are a lame-o that comes in as I am most of the time, where I just can get shredded in one hit because that's the glass cannon build I built.
Well, but it's not so much that it's not a matter of whether the person comes in as a lame-o or not. It's like it's more I chose to play this class, and unfortunately, that's not the class of the month right now, so I get kicked from every group.
I'm just saying.
Wait.
They are, I agree. And the problem is that they're given too much power.
No, because I pug dungeons, like, fairly frequently, and I've never had a problem with kicking anyone or getting kicked because of their class.
What class do you play?
I was playing most of the time Mesmer.
I think in all the concept that they're trying to go for is kind of revolutionary for a MMO platform, and I applaud them for that. And I think it is for the person that has the mindset that they are – okay, for the person that is always going to be on every day to do stuff, this is my opinion, and they add a new story note and then it changes and they can go do that and they're done and they're back to whatever they're normally doing, that is great. But for somebody that wants to have – Who has a mindset of, okay, I've stopped playing because I've done everything I want to do and I'm waiting for the next update. And okay, now we have it. Now I will dedicate 72 hours of my time within the next year to playing said update. I have that mindset. I can now micromanage my life around that there's a new update and I can do that. Now, if they would have taken the Living Story as a concept and said, Here's your massive update. Here's your expansion. It's called The Living Story. And it just expands as you play it. Granted, that's not a living story, but they could have done the same thing. So what they decided to do was take a concept that WoW and many other MMOs have done and say, here's your 1 year update. It's beautiful. Go play it. When you're done and that's it. And they decided to take it and break it up into, you know, monthly updates. which is cool. I get it. And I think it's phenomenal that they're trying new things. And I love that. I don't want to say that that's a bad idea. It just doesn't work for me.
I think, honestly, one thing that could really fix this whole living story thing and make this a lot more successful, probably.
Good writing?
For
good
a lot
writing?
Of players.
Good writing?
No. Like, just from a technical standpoint, is okay. it the way that the living story has been set up so far, it's essentially encouraging you to log in often, which is not a bad thing. It's an odd thing for an MMO that doesn't have a subscription fee, but it's not a bad thing. However, that's not necessarily what every player can do. And so if they were to implement some kind of a system that basically allowed, like, if they treated it more like actual, like, kind of episodic content, like they're actually historical giving it out thing. As, yeah, like, so go talk to a dude and be like, hey, do you remember when this happened? And then you load it to an instance and you go do, like, the first episode of The Living Story months after it happened. Like, and that would be really cool.
We talked about that the moment they introduced The Living Story. We were like, wouldn't it be awesome if we could, like, relive the parts we missed? Because I can't log in every week, et cetera.
Like, even if you can't get the rewards from it, like, even if those are just, you know, you had to be there to get them, that's fine. But, like, at least let's go back and do the content.
If they're talking about this and treating it like a TV show, you can go back and watch old episodes of a TV show.
Yeah,
exactly. Whereas you can't go back and replay any of this stuff.
They could do is you could have, you know, a director pick up a script to make a Guild Wars 2 movie.
And then at the end
of every year, they make a movie based on what has happened for that year. And now you just watch a 2-hour movie and you're caught up.
As long as that director also has a whole new team of writers and like a decent budget, he could probably do a better job than what they've done. So I'd prefer that to playing this stuff.
It's funny because they've actually done a good job in the more recent updates of recapping everything that happened beforehand.
They have.
Doing like a really good job.
Yeah, also like recapping. But the previous update before this one was exactly a recap.
I also
is like a recap is great. Like, that's nice that they're keeping us up to date on what happened while we were gone, but I would have liked to have played it. And, you know, maybe I would just life got in the way and I missed an entire section of The Living Story and now I'll never be able to play that again.
Time waits for no man.
You can do, the Flame and Frost and then one of the other ones. I think it's the Aetherblade, and the Fractals. Like, you can do those dungeons. Do those like, tonally, like, is the lore pretty much there? Like, do they have a whole, like, the whole?
No,
not really, because it's kind of just like the first half of the dungeon.
Right, and it's also a random chance whether you get those. Right. Oh no, one of them is choosable, right? Or is that being crazy?
No, it's all. You could the one when they added the reactor one in that update, which is the one that people voted on.
Yeah.
You could choose to do just that one if you wanted to.
Okay. But you can no longer choose that one now.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Either way, yeah. So I know it's a weird gray area where if they get to the point at next week where they reveal the next big bag and it's a dragon, right? So it's going to be like a world event kind of thing. Everyone's going to be pitching in to defeat that dragon. What do you guys think would happen if it is a dragon and it's just the next season of The Living World is the slow defeat of that dragon, and we don't get something like your new race or new classes or anything like that between here and there. Like another year.
Races and classes, I'd be fine, but in terms of like, if they don't add any new areas or anything, I'd be pretty bummed.
Yeah. They kind of have to, right? They have to add new areas.
Because like, they've added new areas, just a lot of them were temporary. Like the Bazaar, the Four Winds, that area with like that giant airship and everything was super fun. Was really well designed and was
that was really,
really
good. I'm surprised it's gone.
That was the one between Keel and Nashblade, right?
Where that was.
And I enjoyed it. I thought that was great. That was a really nice expansion. Look at me. That was a good update, and I did enjoy doing that one. Definitely.
Even beyond like just the playability of it, it looked beautiful and it dripped lore. It was a really dense update, which I really liked. Even though I never completed the challenges on the island, it was just
something else that I just realized is like they're working on the Chinese release of the game.
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, it's pretty much done.
Okay, I was gonna say do they have the resources
localizing it? That's what they were working
on. They're changing a whole bunch of things to make it more grindy because China.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's mostly the same.
Well, so they're going to be on their own servers? They're not going to be interacting with us?
No, own servers. Well, like, Europe is on their own servers.
Well, right. So if they're, but if they're Mark Grindy, does that mean that, okay, I'm sorry to go off on a tangent here, but does that mean that their auction house is incorporated with our auction house and that they're Grindy?
No, I don't really doubt believe it. So.
Okay.
Because I know that, like, NA and Europe all share the same trading post. It's global.
Right.
But I don't believe China will be there because it's basically a different game.
Right, and that's I would okay. I was just kind of worried about what you guys' thought was on that because I don't know that would have been messed up.
It would have been messed up.
Yeah.
But no, do they have time to do this whole like setup for a reveal in between this living story and the next one with four teams constantly working on a weekly release, working on the Chinese release of the game, and also working on a quote unquote expansion?
I don't know how much ArenaNet is actually doing in terms of hands-on work for the Chinese release.
Yeah, they could be farming that out. Which is what I would do if I was them. Because, yeah, especially in terms of localization, I wouldn't take that in-house. I would let someone local do
that
localization.
That would be a great question to ask our dear and closest friend to yes. Podcast.
I doubt ArenaNet's doing much of that. I think NCSoft is farming that out.
Yeah, so it's gonna be interesting to see the next... I personally, my answer to that question would be if they do reveal the next big bad, I want an expansion from there on. I don't need this drip feeding crap. Durin, what are your thoughts there? Do you want next week to be, hey, this is the new big bad, and hey, also surprise announcement, this is the date for the next expansion? Or would you rather it go, okay, new season of the living story?
I would be okay with an expansion as long as it felt like a proper MMO expansion, which the more this game has gone on, the more I feel like that goes completely against what they want to do in this game. Like, in order for an expansion to make sense, we're talking like a large chunk of new,
landmass,
new ground to cover. The game doesn't have horizontal or vertical progression. So some sort of new armor sets and quite a few of them. Probably, like you said, a new race and or class. And that just seems like a lot of content. Like, I feel like if they did that, then over the next, 8 to 12 months, we would get like nothing in this game. Like, there would be no content updates. I feel like you get one or the other. You can't do both.
You can't have updates every 2 weeks while also working on a proper box expansion. That's craziness.
And I would be okay with that because you would have your box expansion and then you would have your summer, maybe winter and other holiday events that would come along. I would be okay with that.
They did a full year of living story. I can deal with some downtime.
Now, what if they? I mean, you're talking about paid box expansion, and your biggest thing that you would want out of that is the Tengu race or just a new race in general.
Like, I want a new race.
Given that this is not a subscription based MMO, would it really be too heinous if they just put a new race up in the gym shop instead of like holding it out for an expansion?
If it attaches to a story, probably.
Also, that sounds a lot like the. Like, putting a race in the gem shop sounds like what Elder Scrolls Online is doing with the Imperials.
Well, except Elder Scrolls Online is also charging a subscription fee. That's the difference of saying, would it really be that bad in a game that has no subscription fee and doesn't have an expansion model?
I would not be a fan.
If a new race is $30 and it was literally their entire personal story... I would probably consider it.
And for $50, you can get them 80 just like that.
Yeah, if it was a one-time unlock of access to that, like to make new characters.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like you pay, $20 or something. What if it's like $20, there is no like special personal story for them. They just, you basically pick which personal story you want to do. Same anyway.
I would not. If I paid $20-$30 in the gem store, or if I used in-game gold and converted the gems and bought it, and it had a entire backlog of history, like everyone's saying, knowledge, and it was their own story, I would totally do that because that would be me buying an expansion.
They don't have any history of locking content behind like that type of a paywall.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would be kind of bummed if they started.
But at the same time, prior to this game, they didn't have a history of, having multiple races.
But what is a paywall? I mean, would you not say a box expansion is a paywall in its own?
But a box expansion entails more than that. It has a whole bunch of new content that you can do with your previously made characters. That's the thing.
Well, and that's why I said you would do it at a discounted price, like $20. Still, is all you're getting a race.
Still, I don't know if I would be a big fan of that.
Well, and I guess they could do like personal story quests because that's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much extra work. But they probably wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't give them like this whole new zone. To come from, like, you probably would just start in one of the other zones and you'd have your own personal story moving through. Because otherwise, then at that point, you are talking about a lot of content for something that players, you know, a lot of players wouldn't end up seeing because they may not purchase that content.
I mean, I wouldn't want, like, someone standing in for, let's just say, is the iconic Tybalt, and, you know, that the Tengu have their own Tybalt, and it's kind of the same story, but cookie cutter built on what you played before. So,
yeah. Okay with that.
So I would want something new and something, you know.
So would you be okay with it if they had their own personal story, but it just existed within the currently existing locations? Framework. Like, you know, you play as a Tengu and you have
no,
your own
because story, I think the Tengu have to have their own area. They have to have their own part of the world that has yet been discovered by all races.
I mean,
let's just say
if you look at where they are on the map.
Sure.
They have a city like right there. They already got a city.
And that could make sense if they, you know, if they continue with the direction they're going, eventually, you know, they unlock that world as the story moves that direction. And then when that free content is unlocked, you know, moving to that world, they release the Tengu as a playable race.
Right. And that'd be fine. Like next week, they open up this whole area and hey, you can now buy the Tengu and play that character and have your own personal story for the Tengu and that lore. And then you go into the regular story that's already been out there. That would
make sense because at that point there's a double use for making that content.
Yeah, like that would be a decent balance. DLC. That would be a good balance. Yeah. I could deal with that. But I wouldn't want somebody that's a human being able to play, you know, of course, the Tengu side and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, but then the question comes into play is how does their lore interact with the humans, with the Norn, with, you know, all the other characters,
like this, it would probably be not at all.
Exactly, which is why I wouldn't buy it. Like, I'd want it to be
because a proper
like if you did Tengu, their personal story would basically probably end at the events we're seeing now. Like
this
destruction of Lion's Arch and them climbing up on the wall and doing what they're doing. Like you'd see it from their side, but I think that's the way they would have to do it.
Now that would be cool. Okay, if they did that at this point. For people who have, and that's tough, right? So let's say you start the game brand new game. You start a brand new game.
You start a new character,
and you go, oh, I can buy this cool race, and I buy the race, and then you play the story, and then all of a sudden you're seeing kind of like the end story. I don't know.
The end story at the end of your story.
Basically, what we're saying is, Dern, you have terrible ideas.
I'm just trying to
figure out how
to possibly do that without having the expansion model because I really don't think that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I understand where Durin's trying to go, and I get that, and I like the idea. I do think it has to be ironed out by people who are probably smarter with what they're working on than I am.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But
this is very much a rough
speculation. This is what we want. It's a wish list, you could say. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what the future has to hold, but hoping for good things.
Yeah, definitely an interesting question that doesn't have a definite answer.
Yeah, and I would like to say that in the end, it is almost certain to me that the only thing I can say with absolute certainty is that if they just slowly develop it and eventually release a race that somehow like only is released because of the progression of the personal story and all that happens as it is like nowadays with like this being drip fed to us, it will not be anywhere near as effective for anyone involved as an expansion would be.
It's just
impossible.
The financials and otherwise.
I mean, obviously current financials are an interesting place to point to because they're indicating growth in profits or at least a larger capitalization upon the current user base. But I definitely think that the old model of having a large influx of new and old users again, it definitely disrupts that and changes that in a large way. Because if they're making this much money now off the current user base, if they get a bump by user base by having expansion, which you would have because you have all the marketing push behind it and et cetera.
Well, I mean, do we know that they're not getting a similar bump when they release these personal story updates?
Well, I can, if you look at the gem prices, yes. I use that as an indication, yes.
I can give you an example. When I used to play, I played EVE Online when it came out, and then I stopped. But every time for a good period, a good 4-year period, when EVE said, hey, we have an expansion coming out, I would re-up my subscription.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I would play it.
To this day, I still do that with WoW.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, so, but then I would play it and I'd be like, all right, well, you know, none of my friends are doing it or whatever, or I did what was done, and then I would stop. Mm-hmm. And then the next one would come out. I'd be like, all right, here's $15 for a month. Let's see how much I can get out of it for a month. I didn't do a lot. Okay, cancel my subscription. They were at least getting that monetary value. So the question is.
Well, and that's the reason I kind of ask is because, like, you know, as somebody who's done that with WoW, like, I plan on when the new expansion comes out, I'm probably going to buy that expansion and mm-hmm. pay for probably a few months to check out the content. But, like, as somebody who doesn't play Guild Wars 2 every day, I keep doing the same thing with Guild Wars 2. Every time there's a big update, you guys see me come on, and I'm turning into fucking noob. I keep buying goddamn Guild Wars gear.
So that's what I mean.
God,
like,
you're crazy person.
It's working on, like, I hesitate to say a smaller scale, but, like, yeah. Instead of getting, like, $60 for an expansion plus 15 for a month out of you, like, once a year or year and a half, they're getting $10 out of you here and there.
Over the course of the last, you know, year – I've bought, you know, a character slot for 800, a hairdo thing for 250, transmutation stone for 200.
Because you asked me, you messaged me on Steam the other day. You were just like, what does that new Flame Kiss skin look like? Does it look good?
Yeah, like I was just thinking a little bit ago, we need to stop talking about Guild Wars 2 soon because I keep staring at it and I've gotten so far as almost buying the gems to buy it.
And see, what I do in the game is, I guess Shin's right on that point, is when there was a new expansion when I had stopped earlier on, and I would come in, they'd be like, oh, there's a new new hatchet that's unbreakable. You could use it forever. So I'd log in. I would buy $50 in gems. And yes, every single time. So they have at least $400, $500 of my money right now. And then I would, you know, buy whatever that is. And then I would go away.
Go ahead.
So, and then I would go back. And then I would basically come back in. And if there was nothing I wanted for that one, I would trade my gems for gold. And then just sit on the gold. And that would be just my process of doing it. And I would be like, okay, I don't pay a monthly fee, so I'll give them money because they're still entertaining me at some point. So I guess in a roundabout way, it does work, but I would still like to see that milestone just in the ground, hammered down.
2.0.
Yeah. You
have to compare it to another factor, which let's look at the argument of like Nintendo going to mobile, right? One of the biggest things for Nintendo going to mobile is, hey, why don't you release like mobile games, which are your high quality games, but cheaper, like $1 to $2 on mobile. Look at the amount of money Angry Birds, et cetera, is making. Cause they make a shitload of money, which is kind of that's the equivalency here. It's a long period of time of microtransactions versus less often, but a massive transaction. So your $60 price tag, et cetera.
Right.
And the reason, but there's been a massive swell of counter-argument because there's a really good reason why Nintendo doesn't go to that model. Because if you actually look at the earnings of, for example, Mario Kart, which sold 10 million copies at $60 a piece, even though they only released one successful copy of Mario Kart for the Wii generation,
$50
that's still at $50 a piece. Yeah, that one successful copy of, type of Mario Kart for the Wii generation, that still made them just as much, if not more, than what they would have made over that same period if they'd gone to mobile. So
it's actually to make a similar argument. I know, like the YouTube, this is loosely related. I guess are we done with Guild Wars 2 talk?
Well, we're still talking about Guild Wars 2 in a roundabout way.
Yeah, roundabout way. Well, I just know that like the YouTube guys are with the New Year's amount of like YouTube will not necessarily charge you for the first few days if your video might not be like quality or something. Is you want to make something that is lasts really good quality for the longest amount of time, not a brief viral sellout.
Yeah.
Which I think is what you're trying to make, Cynic, right?
You know, that's very equivalent as well. Like, for example, like one really good video that gets 13 million views over like a year is better than like cheap videos that give you like 10,000, 30,000, 40,000, 100,000 views.
So you're saying Gangnam Style is basically the WoW of YouTube videos.
The evergreen YouTube video. Yes. Evergreen. That's the word like used for it. It's the difference between evergreen content, which is your new expansion, or small pieces of like microtransactions, which are your costumes, et cetera. Evergreen content does actually make you more in the long run.
So before we move on from Guild Wars 2, I just want to quickly ask if you guys had talked about this. This is kind of old at this point, but what were just quickly everyone's feelings when they added the Watchwork mining pick that is better than the Molten mining pick that they had already charged us money for the first time?
Well, how was it better? Because obviously I didn't realize that, and I would have.
There's a type of, I believe it's a crafting piece that you can get or something. There's a thing that it can mine that has a chance to actually come out of it when it mines that you can't get through the mining or through the molten one.
Well, that sucks. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So all of us at the molten one, like, we have the inferior mining pick.
You know, they didn't have better advertising on their stuff they're trying to sell me. That's all I got to say on that.
I guess my only question is, like, is there a chance to get that thing with the normal mining pick? Just like a standard consumable breakable mining pick.
I don't believe so, no.
Then there's actually, kind of pissed.
I believe the Watchwork mining pick is the only mining pick that can get you that. Now, granted, whatever these things are, I forgot, Shin would probably know if he was here. But whatever the things are, like, they're super easy to get otherwise. Like, they're really cheap in the auction house. Or, sorry, trading post. But still, it's just a matter of, like, this added functionality to this gem shop item that basically makes mine inferior that I paid them money for also.
I don't like... It's... I'm not sorry for you having paid that a while ago. It is scummy, and I understand why you're scummy about it. But I am pissed that there's not a free version to get. Like, that is a telltale sign of, like, pay to win sort
well,
of thing.
Like I said, I forget what the items are called, but whatever they are, like, there are other means of getting them.
Yeah, like, they drop off, like, bosses or and whatnot, too, I'm sure. But
something. But as far as mining picks go, I believe that is the only mining pick that you can get them from.
Anyway. Yeah. I need to go in like 10 minutes for a short break. So,
yeah. I guess this concludes the Lincoln Cast part of the episode, and we'll take a short break while Cynic does whatever he needs to, and then we'll come back with the Scotch Cast.